Welcome back to the podcast, you beautiful soul. I've got an absolute, I don't even know how to introduce him. I do have an introduction, but a gift, a conscious being, someone who's making so much impact on people's lives from an intimate level, a personal level, an emotional level. I've got Matt Karmer on the podcast today, and we're just talking. I messaged him October 27th, 2020, 3 years ago. Been following him up, and I finally got him here on the podcast today. Matt is a globally respected dating and intimacy coach, author, speaker, and the founder of Embodied Love and the Online Coach Academy. His content has reached tens of millions of people. Matt is an expert when it comes to helping single people attract their dream partner by leading with his main principle he teaches in his programs and his retreats, which we'll dive into today. But Matt, I could speak about you for ages, my man. I want to just say thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Lewis. I am honored to be here and to be able to speak to your audience and anyone else who listens.
Thank you, bro, man. For people that don't know who you are, who haven't seen your content, aren't familiar with you, what's your story in a nutshell? And then we'll start jumping down some rabbit holes.
Yeah. So quick 2 minute background for anyone who is first listening to me. My story begins, let's just rewind you back to my very first year of high school. Before going in high school, by the way, I was a very bubbly kid, very out there, very outgoing, just unapologetically me, like most kids before being conditioned and going through trauma. And when I went into my very first year of high school, that's when I noticed that who I was started to become suppressed. And my very first year of high school, I was bullied. I was at a sports high school. For those of you who aren't from Australia, there's like sports high schools over there. And I was called Fat Matt on a daily basis. And I wasn't massively overweight or obese or anything like that, but I was chubby enough to be laughed at. And it got to the point where I learned the adaptation was become as small and as invisible as possible, because if you do that, then that's when you're going to be safe. Because clearly being seen equals pain. So suppress your voice, suppress how you dress, suppress everything, and try to become as small and as mute as possible. But that then got me more bullied, and I was being called Mute Karma instead of Matt Karma.
Wow.
So what happened was, in relationships and in dating, the patterns that started to show up was pleasing, just going along with whatever it is that they wanted to do, not using my voice. My throat energy center chakra was really blocked. So not speaking up, not choosing what it is that I wanted. And that was showing up in all areas of my life. So it got to the point where there was just so much pain where I said enough was enough. And for me, I started to hire a dating coach, and I just started to work on my confidence and learning how to speak to women. The challenge though was, even though I was learning a lot of the skills to speak and to flirt and to speak to women, which I didn't know how to do, there was still so much trauma that was sitting in my body. But once I started to combine all of those skills with doing the somatic work, doing nervous system work, working on releasing suppressed emotions, then after combining those two things, the inner work with the outer work, the skills and so on, that's when everything started to shift. And now here I am about to get married to the woman of my dreams and being able to now teach other people how to do the same thing. So that's a story in a nutshell. There's so many other details, but that's the 3 minute version of that.
That's beautiful, man. And I've been watching you, like I said, for many years now, and to see you evolve, and you can see it through your content and through the relationship now with your beautiful partner, Kelly. It's beautiful, man. So, man, there's a lot of topics I'd like to get into. Let's have dessert first. Let's just go straight to the one that I really enjoy. We've got not a mutual connection, but I know you've connected with him, and I follow him like no tomorrow, Peter Crone. And I love his work, and he has a quote. I've iterated it to make sense a little bit to me. He says that life will present you with people and circumstances to reveal where you're not free. And my iteration for me, with the terminology I use, is that you will attract people and circumstances to reveal the wounds you haven't healed through. And for me, I totally believe that will happen the most inside an intimate relationship, because they see you more than anyone else. So they're going to shine light on those parts of you more than anyone else. Like you and me, even though I've been pestering you for a couple of years online, like we've just met each other. We'll see each other for an hour, hopefully more in the future. But you're not going to see the sides of me that my partner does. I won't see the sides of you that your partner does. So I would love for you to lean. I would love to hear your perspective on, I guess, the role of trauma, but also the ability to heal through it in a relationship when done correctly. When instead of blaming and projecting, you take that ownership and you love and heal each other. I'd love to hear your views on that topic, man.
Yeah, I love this. This is we can start to speak about the topic of shadow work, right? So for those of you who have heard this term but don't really understand what it is, or for those of you who understand a little bit of what it is, to break it down simply, shadow work is your ability to be able to shine light on the aspects of your personality that you have suppressed, that you've denied, that you've judged, that you maybe have shame about. And sometimes that will show up, the spotlight on those parts of you will show up in the form of triggers by other people. And sometimes that is going to be your partner. And before going even deeper into this and speaking about this topic, we first get to look at what does it mean when we speak about our personality. And we can think of our personality as our thoughts, our emotions, and our behaviors. So when we start to look at shadow work, and especially in a relationship and looking at our blind spots, we have to look at, okay, what are the behaviors that maybe I have shame about, that I deny, that I suppress, that I judge? What are the emotions that I judge, that I suppress, that I deny? What are the thoughts that I have that come up, and then I think that I shouldn't be thinking that way? So I deny them. So I suppress them. So I judge the thoughts that show up. And when doing so, that just then becomes recycled. So the very first step to becoming free, like Peter Crone and what you just shared, is by shining light on that and having that awareness, put simply. But awareness sometimes isn't enough. After we have that awareness, the next step to integrate that part of our shadow is acceptance. To seeing that any behavior, any emotion, any thought isn't wrong, isn't bad, it's just there, and it's there for a reason. If we look at someone's history, it makes sense why someone thinks that way. It makes sense why someone feels that way. It makes sense why someone behaves that way. And it doesn't mean that we then approve of the way that they're being and the way that they're showing up in a relationship, or the way that you're showing up in a relationship. It's just bringing awareness and acceptance to why it is showing up in the first place. Because then we can start to transform ourselves from a level of ease and grace, rather than I'm bad, I'm shameful, I'm broken, and I need fixing. Two completely different paradigms. Then after doing that step, the second step, the third step is integration. So if you want to go into shadow work, first step is awareness. How do you do that? You can get objective feedback. You can look at your own triggers. You can start to become aware of your blind spots. Those two simple ways, right? Notice what triggers you. Second step, acceptance. Third step is integration. Now, how we go through that, there are so many different ways to do that. But one of the things that I love teaching about is doing the exact opposite of what your shadow or your ego wants you to do. So if you notice that the behavioral tendency when in conflict is to go into a fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response, the tendency, right? The pattern is leave, don't speak about your feelings, don't speak about what's bothering you, right? Remain mute. However, I know the pattern. I know what happens if I was to follow that. So it's for me to breathe and do the exact opposite is to lean into what's uncomfortable and say, my love, right now, I am feeling like I just want to leave. And what I would really love is if we can just sit here for 2 minutes of silence while I just breathe for a second before continuing this conversation. Are you open to that? Yeah. What about we breathe together? Awesome. Now we're getting into co-regulation. Now we're coming together and we're breathing. And then after that, we can have that conversation and I can do it from a place where I'm not fully triggered. So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Loving it.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's any follow-up questions to that, but those are three things that you can do.
Beautiful.
Awareness, man. Acceptance, integration.
And then how does one do that in a sort of day-to-day? So say you and Kelly, or me and my fiance, Georgia, say we trigger ourselves. Say I trigger her, she triggers me. In your words, because I've got my ways of doing it, but I want to hear your ways of how does one like handle the storm when it's happening. Like I personally believe don't do the healing in the storm, let the storm settle and then come through it with neutral nervous system, different perceptions, and heal through whatever's brought to the surface. How does one, so say someone's listening to this right now and their partner pushes their buttons, they get triggered, their partner sets them off, and it's like, they don't know what to do. Okay, I get it, Matt, she's triggered the shit out of me, or he's triggered the shit out of me, and they just don't know how to improve it. What would you say to that?
Great question. First step is to take 110% responsibility for your own triggers. So even with the language, like, and this is very common, by the way, and she triggers me, he triggers me, my boss triggers me, my ex-partner triggers me. I understand the language of that. What can be more effective and helpful is catching any time that that happens and then saying to yourself, I'm being triggered. I'm triggering myself, and the other person is just holding up a mirror. Because from that shift in language, then that then opens up the door to take full responsibility for what is showing up in your body. So if someone is showing up a certain way, then they're holding up a mirror to something showing up in me that is mirroring or highlighting the aspects of me that I've denied, that I've suppressed, that I've judged, that I've denied for a very long time. So how you do it in the day to day is having laser awareness, catching it, right? So one of the things that I do and I give to my clients, and this is something so tangible and practical that all of you can do. I give my clients what is called an awareness journal. So what I give them is I get them to write down on their phone in their notes, awareness journal. And every single day, write the date of the year. And then anytime that you notice a thought show up, an emotion show up, or a behavior show up that is part of the shadow, right? The things that you don't know about yourself, write it down. Write it down in detail. What's showing up for you? What were the things that were going on in your mind? What was when the emotion was present, the sensation was present? What were the thoughts associated with that? When you were going to do that behavior, what was the thing that you were thinking about that caused that behavior to show up in the first place? So in the moment, when you have that awareness, and then the next time that that shows up, you can then catch it, right? So that could be helpful because it's kind of like when, I was actually just saying this to a client yesterday, when athletes watch tape, they watch a match recording of how they did the last game, they can see what it is that they didn't know about how they were playing the game. They can do it by seeing it themselves, and then they can have objective feedback from their coaches and other players and just see like how it is that they're doing all these little 1% things that could make their how they show up in the game better. And that's kind of what you're doing when you have this awareness journal. So the next time that you get on the field, which is having a conversation with your partner, which is whatever it might be, you can then say like, oh, that's the thing that I did last time. And now that I can see it and it's front of mind, I can then make a new decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Is there any perception shifts as well? Like as an, like one that comes to mind, I think I got it from Peter Crone actually on a podcast, but looking, it's helped me because sometimes I get frustrated. I think like every person can, where it's like being able to look through the lens of who you're talking to is just a big five-year-old. And how would you treat a five-year-old? That was a lens that really helped me. Is there any lenses that you have that you'd recommend to people? Because I'm speaking from my experience. Like when I know this stuff, but when you're on the field, sometimes it's fucking challenging. Like when you're triggered and you know what, this is my stuff. Thank you for the gift. Whatever's going on, it's still like, there's still that like ego in there and it's still wanting to bite. It's still, it can be challenging and maybe I'm just the only one. So that lens has really helped me. It's like when my partner's triggered, I'm like, this is just a five-year-old. What would I do to a five-year-old right now? Mm. And that's been a lens that's really served me. So do you have any lenses or any perceptions that would help in this scenario with helping people work through each other's stuff while they're triggered, while they're in the moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is perspective shifts, and this is when we can start to go into empathy, right? And there's three different types of empathy. There's mental empathy, there's emotional empathy, and there's behavioral empathy. Mm. So mental empathy can be helpful, which is kind of what you're doing, which is thinking about the pictures of, oh, this is just a big five-year-old. Sometimes it can be helpful to bring up an image or a picture or your imagination of who I'm speaking to right now and like seeing the five-year-old, right? Like really seeing that when your partner is yelling or screaming or crying, whatever it might be, can you see the little girl or the little boy within them and have that image there? But another thing around mental empathy, which can also be related to emotional empathy, is putting yourself in their shoes. So sometimes that can be challenging in the moment. Sometimes that happens with a little bit of space. But one of the things that I contemplate on, and I've done this so many times, is whenever it is that I can't understand Kelly's perspective, I will then have to look back and be like, okay, Let's just imagine for a second that I was Kelly. Knowing what I know about her, knowing what I know about her triggers, knowing what I know about her history, why would she be feeling and having this response? And then I can be like, oh, that makes sense. It makes total sense why it is that she's having this perspective. And then I can come back and have this conversation and work through the conflict with it with total understanding rather than from judgment. Because sometimes to go from judgment to empathy, it can be too wide of a gap, but curiosity is the bridge. To go from judgment to empathy, curiosity is the bridge. And curiosity shows.
We're back, ladies and gentlemen. Little technical dropout. But yeah, Matt, you're just saying, well, to go from empathy to judgment, using curiosity as the bridge, which I love. I've never heard that before. Yeah, that's really powerful, man. So please continue where you're up to.
Yeah, and on that, you know, language is really important with this as well. So one of the things that we teach when we're working with couples and single people is start to ask what questions instead of why questions. Here is an example of this. The other day, we have like two gates at our home, right? And that's just to ensure that we're fully secure here, because literally just yesterday we had someone steal our bike helmet here in Bali. Yeah. So we want to ensure that, you know, we've had our house robbed and so many other things. We have all these gates here. And I came home one day and I had a call in about 20 minutes. So I was in a rush. But the door was locked and Kelly was upstairs and she couldn't hear me knocking. Yeah, so then I just started banging on the door because she wasn't answering her phone and so on. And I didn't know she was on a call. So she came down totally in like stress and she was feeling a little bit frustrated. So was I. And when she opened the door, my first thought wanted to go into, why did you lock the door?
Yeah.
But because I know if I ask, for example, just pause that story for a second. I'm going to come back to that.
Yep.
Lewis, if I said to you, why are you wearing that jumper today, that sweater? What shows up in your...
Feels comfortable. I like it.
The answer, but like if I ask that question, like what's the emotional sensation? I'm like, why are you wearing that?
My mind goes to curiosity. Why are you asking?
Okay, awesome. Well, this might be a little bit different. You've done so much work. For some people, when I ask that, it's like it brings up some defensiveness. Why is your hair like that? Why are you wearing that? However, if I then switch to a what question, which is, what has you love that sweater? It goes from defensiveness to then feeling, I'm open and receptive.
Yeah.
Now coming back to that story, I knew not to ask that question. So then after she was in a rush, she went to her call, she came back downstairs. I went through my call, I came back. Then when we came together, I asked her, I said, babe, like what has you locked the door when I'm gone? Now, instead of me going into penetration, like tell me why, which can bring up defensiveness, right? Judgment to empathy. Curiosity is the bridge. So a what question is a curiosity question. What has you do that? What comes up for you when I say this thing? I'm noticing you're feeling a little bit angry. Can you tell me what's going on for you right now? Right? Instantly diffuses the situation. So hopefully that was helpful to everyone listening.
Really powerful, man. One more sort of subtopic on this and then we'll shift gears a bit. What's the line for you? What's the advice that you have between, because I've made videos around like triggering, it's a good thing, it's allowing you to heal, but where's the line between being triggered in, let's call it, a natural, normal way versus like toxic, this is the wrong person for you? Where's the line for you? And what advice would you have for people in that sort of circumstance?
That's a great question. And I like to make the distinction between being triggered, which can be for your highest growth, and then activated, which can then just create a re-trauma and not have you go into your highest growth.
Yeah.
So the difference is normally it's when it's in a very safe environment, not all the time, but sometimes in a very safe environment. So this is when discernment is so important, because sometimes people can hear stuff like this and be like, oh, I'm going to stay in this relationship, even though it's emotionally abusive or physically abusive, because it's for my highest growth. discernment. So are you at a point where there's so much pain, where it's really challenging for you to see your blind spots? Is it not there for your highest growth right now? So it can be a tricky line to speak about, which is why it depends on someone's situation. But I would say discernment is important here, asking yourself that question.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful. There's other sort of subtopics, but I'll change gear and then we'll come back to some more relationship stuff.
Cool.
Man, I'd love to know from you, and I'd love to know about my guests. What's something that you think about a lot, but you don't talk about publicly?
That's a great question. What is something that I think about a lot that I don't talk about publicly?
And it might be you don't just speak about it very often. You might speak about it, because you're from my content, a lot of relationship, masculine energy, healing, trauma. That's like kind of how I perceive you anyways. What are things that you think about that doesn't sort of get the limelight as much as the other stuff?
That's a great question. I think that something that I'm so in love with is language, which is why you speak about Peter Crohn, which is why I'm so drawn to him and worked with him, because I just loved how language builds our world, and it can be a key to either open up the gate to a new paradigm, or it can lock us into a jail cell of pain, right? Just that simple shift in language. Why question versus a what question. You trigger me versus I'm being triggered. This completely changes our perception, because with language, it then shows us that I'm not seeing reality. I'm projecting reality, which is completely different. I'm not seeing Lewis. I'm making a projection right now, right? And the language that I have about myself, which is the conversation, will distort my perception of reality to conform to what is the conversation going on. So if I believe that I'm ugly, how I see you is going to be completely different, because I might be having a whole different world and saying, Lewis is thinking I'm ugly. He's judging me right now. He's probably judging my hair and my white hairs here. He's probably it's just from that language that I have about myself.
Crazy, man.
So I love language, and it's probably something that I don't speak about publicly, but with my clients, I'm like listening and just going in on, because language can reveal a lot about someone's paradigm.
Absolutely, man. If you're comfortable sharing this, what's been a shift for you? Maybe there was a way you viewed yourself, or you viewed the world, or you viewed relationships. What was a shift that you've had along your journey that was really profound for you?
Yeah, that's a great one. I remember the exact moment, and this isn't recently, but I do remember something that really helped me. I used to think that I was just shy. I just had that identity about myself. You know, growing up, mute karma instead of Matt karma, that was my identity. It's like, I am just a shy person. And I remember listening to CDs and when I was driving a car. And I remember listening to Tony Robbins, and it was like Unlimited Power or something like that. It was one of his CDs that I had. And I remember him just talking about how our identities. And I remember just thinking like, whoa, I'm not a shy person. It's just been a belief that I've been having about myself. And now it just seems so basic, like, of course, right? But back then I remember just being like, I'm not a shy person. And my whole model of reality just came crumbling down. And then I started to see myself completely different. I started to see myself as not being shy, which opened up the space and room for me to then go into, you know, doing a lot of energetic work around my, my throat, learning how to speak, learning how to project my voice, and not live from that paradigm.
Really powerful, man. Tony Robbins, my partner's there right now. She's at UPW in Sydney. And he was my first event I went to about 8 years ago. There's a lot of common that now that I'm speaking to you and hearing a little bit more about your sort of background. I was bullied, mum and dad, toxic relationship, very shy, very didn't speak up for myself. The belief I did at Tony Robbins, Unleash the Power Within, UPW, great event, guys, go do it, because Tony's starting to get a little bit older, so he might not be doing it for much longer. The belief I had, because you do like a limiting belief destruction thing, you rewrite it.
Yeah.
But the belief I had was relationships are painful. And it's like, you wonder why I was fucking single. You could like, that was a belief I had. And then when you destroy it, because you just picked it up from mom, dad, or whatever it may be. Yeah, I'll use that as a segue in, because for me, the pain that I saw with my father, and he's done a lot of work now, and we've mended a lot of our relationship. I really perceived him as what I think a lot of people would, in quotations, call it the toxic masculine. Very aggressive, volatile with his emotions. I've got memories of him punching holes through the wall. My sister felt very unsafe. I felt very unsafe around him. So all of that to ask the question, for you, what for you is your sort of view or definition on, quote, the healthy masculine versus the not so healthy, or whatever you'd call it, whether embodied, disempowered, whatever? What's the healthy masculine versus the unhealthy masculine in your world?
Love that. One of the things that you spoke about, which is, I believe, it's not missing with men, but it is being expressed because of it being repressed, which is their aggression. Mm. Aggression is beautiful when controlled. But when we go into the unhealthy masculine, it can just be aggression because it's being suppressed for so long. So it comes out in uncontrolled ways, whether that be through watching porn, whether that be through abuse, whether that be through many different ways that can be harmful to themselves, to the world, to women, to relationships. But when that aggression is controlled, then it can come out through choice, and it can come out through, it can come out in healthier ways. Right? It can come out when in effective ways. So I love aggression. And the reason why I love aggression is because I've met my anger with so much acceptance and love. And I know how to regulate my nervous system in a way to, for it to come out in ways that when it's a choice, right? It's controlled, not suppressed, but controlled, which is different.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. Another thing that can be really helpful to understand with the unhealthy, you say the unhealthy masculine versus the healthy masculine, just so I'm clear.
Yeah.
Another thing with the healthy masculine is when the masculine is focused on devotion, but not focused on devotion for only himself or the masculine self, but when it's for a higher purpose. Because when it's not for a higher purpose, then sometimes the masculine can focus on devotion, but at the expense of other people. So that was me in the past. I was so focused on work, but to the point where no social life, didn't have friends, I had friends, but didn't have deep connection. I would get to the point where I'd be lost in it so much, to the point where I felt completely burnt out because I had no boundaries on myself. So now leading with devotion, but it's not just for me anymore. It's for my fiance. It's for when we have kids. It's for not just me, but I'm getting on this podcast because I know there's probably a soul on the other end who is listening to this, who's in deep pain. So that can be another thing.
Beautiful. Any thoughts? If you've got any more points, please keep going.
Oh, please ask a question.
It was just going to be the inverse to the feminine, because I'm assuming you deal with both. I don't know. I'd like to hear from you. Do you attract more men or women or a bit of both? What's kind of your clientele? A bit of both?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely shifted over the years. Right now, it's probably 80-20, 80% women, 20% men.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely depends. I did create a men's free program, like a three-day workshop, just helping people to unleash their masculinity.
Yep.
So there is that there, but definitely a lot more women.
Beautiful. If you could maybe lean into the feminine answer or version of that answer as well, what's the, I guess, healthy feminine and the unhealthy feminine? What's the difference between the two?
Yeah. So this is when we can go, like, thinking about the aggression, think of the feminine as a wild storm.
Yeah.
Right. But when the unhealthy feminine is the wild storm, it gets to the point where it's like total destruction, right? So wild and just ruining everything around it, just like a tornado.
Yeah.
But the healthy feminine can bring that out in so many beautiful ways when there is control there, and it's coming from choice, not from repression. It's coming out in ways, whether it be in the bedroom, it's coming out in ways, whether they are creating, whether they're doing arts, right? It's just total mess. It's like letting out their storm. So it's very similar to the masculine. However, the difference is that there's acceptance, going back to the shadow work, right? There's that awareness that energy is within them, and there's acceptance there. So there's peace and love on that aspect of them. And the third step is that it's integrated.
Yeah.
So then it comes out in healthy ways, and it comes out in a way that's not causing destruction.
Beautiful, man. Beautiful answers. You articulate this, man. You've obviously been in those for such a long time now. Boundaries. You actually mentioned the word as you were talking. It was one of my second questions I wrote down. Let's take a step back. How do you define healthy boundaries? And then how does one set and enforce those boundaries?
Great question. So how do you set a boundary? And I'll come back into, actually, let me start with what is a boundary. Think of a boundary. And this is a quote from Jaya John. Yeah. So this isn't my quote. I'm going to misquote this because I don't remember it fully off the top of my head, but he says something like this. Don't think of your boundary as this wall around you or this fence around you that anytime someone touches it, they get shocked. Think of a boundary as this beautiful white light around you that says, I am sacred and I will be treated as so.
I like that.
Something along those lines, but I misquoted that definitely, but something along those lines. And I love that because sometimes boundaries can be like, hey, right now you're crossing a line with me and I'm not going to tolerate that.
Yeah.
Sometimes that is needed when someone is constantly crossing it. And sometimes a boundary can be like, hey, it's really important that I go to bed early because I really want to ensure that I wake up and feel refreshed. How does that feel for you? So now it's going into a demand, which is not leaving room for the other person to respond. Sometimes it is important, by the way, and is necessary. And then a boundary can be, you know, leaving up the space for how does the other person feel and what does the other person think about this? So one of the ways to clarify, to communicate a boundary is to clarify the boundary.
Yeah.
So this is where you get to look at your boundaries are directly linked to your needs.
Yes.
And it's very hard to communicate a boundary if you don't understand what are my needs emotionally, mentally, physically, sensually. Right? Maybe in the bedroom. Let's talk about this for a second. If in the bedroom, there's a certain way that you don't love to be touched, if there's a certain position you don't love doing, if there's a certain pressure that you don't love being pressured on, then it's going to be very hard for you to feel fulfilled in that area because you're not communicating it and you're not fully clear. So the first step is to clarify that. What are my needs? Then we go into communication. So, this is where I just said, like, right now I'm feeling like I really want to have an amazing experience with you. And what I need is X, Y, and Z. So this is where we go into the I feel I need formula that I love to teach my clients. I feel X and what I need is X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And then we go into the third step, which is how do you feel about that? Are you open to that? Which is leaving up the space for conversation. So that's the second step. And then the third step is to cement it if needed. So those are the three steps. Clarify, communicate, cement if needed. And cement is if someone is constantly crossing that. And that's so important for you to ensure that someone doesn't touch you like that. Someone doesn't speak to you like that. Then that's when you might have to have that electric fence and go into a demand, you know, and have a strong boundary that way.
Awesome, man. If you're, again, comfortable sharing, what's been, I guess, some boundaries for you, maybe one that was easier that you just communicated, it was nice. And then maybe an example of your electric fence where you had to say, hey, like put your foot down essentially. Have you got an example of something you've been through, whether it's with your current partner, Kelly, or whether it's a past relationship?
Yeah. I'll share one. This isn't with a partner. I'll come back to this as I'm speaking, but yeah. One recently with a client. So someone was having something because I gave them some feedback from what it is that I see.
Yeah.
And without going into the full details of what she said, she said a certain thing back to me through WhatsApp. And I said to her, hey, right now with the way that you're speaking to me, I'm not going to accept that. Here is what I request moving forward.
Yeah.
Whenever it is that you say something, please do this and take responsibility. Paraphrasing there, but I said something like that. And she was so grateful. She said, I feel like I just got my money's worth with the way that you just responded to me.
That's cool.
Because it got me to see, like, holy shit, that shows up in relationships. And I am such a stand for someone to speak to me from a place of responsibility rather than blame that I was able to clarify that this is the way that I know how I love to be spoken to. And this is important for everyone to remember. We are constantly teaching people how to be with us by what we say.
I like that.
And also by what we don't say. If I didn't say that to her, then she would have probably said that to maybe her partner. She probably would have communicated that to other people, just like blame, 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 blame. But I said, fuck no, I'm a no to that. This is how I'm not going to be spoken to. Here's what I request.
Yep.
So that's a recent example. Another example in dating or in a relationship. I can't think of anything on the top of my head. Maybe it might come up later on.
Circle back if it comes to you, man. This might tie into this question. It even says on your website, and it's arguably probably, well, again, I'll ask you, it might be a reason why a lot of people do come to you, but the art or the science or the, however you want to call it, the ability to attract the right person into your relationship. What do people do wrong and what do people need to do to get it right?
Yes, beautiful question. So one of the things that I love speaking about and Kelly and I teach about is chemistry versus compatibility.
Yes.
The thing that most people get incorrect that we are constantly drilling in is that we want both, by the way. But before I go into like the thing that most people get wrong, just to give some context, we want both. Chemistry is what most people lead with and what most people are searching for. They're looking for that spark. They're looking for that attraction. They're looking for, you know, that hot sex. They're looking for that person that just feels so turned on by it. And normally that's how most relationships start. Yep. You have sex, you feel attracted. There's that, you're getting into a relationship by a mutual friend, or maybe there's proximity because you start working with someone that's a friend of a friend, whatever it is. And then there's that infatuation. And then it gets to the point where we're like, well, we've been having sex for a while now. So like, what is this?
Yeah.
But what we've missed is compatibility.
Yeah.
So think of it like this for everyone listening. If you can't, just have this mental picture. Let's say that I have some potatoes here. I have some French fries. That's the meal. Let's just think that of that as compatibility.
Yeah.
Now, if there is so much spice, so much salt and so much sauce, which is chemistry, then the meal is going to be ruined.
Yeah.
And too little, it's going to be a little bit bland.
Yeah.
So what we want is both. We want a right amount of both. We want compatibility as being the foundation, and we still want that chemistry, because compatibility without chemistry is a friend.
Yeah.
Chemistry, so much chemistry with very little compatibility, is just a sex buddy or a short-term spark.
Yeah.
So knowing that, the thing that most people get incorrect is not having that compatibility there. And we have a whole checklist. I will break down some of the things that can be helpful to look for, which is we help people to remember that what it is that you want for compatibility. There's 10, but I'll just break down a few. One of them is a mutual vision.
Yes. Perfect.
So a mutual vision can be, do I want kids? Do I want a family? Do I want to get married? Where do I want to live? Home location? What do I want to do long term? And sometimes that can shift. So there are nuances to this.
Yeah.
That's the first one. The second one is your short-term intention. The person that I'm dating, what are they looking for? Are they looking for a relationship? Do they just want a short-term spark? Do they just want to have sex? Like, what is the short-term intention? And then the third step is your values, which is, I believe, out of the whole 10, this is probably the most important. So if I'm healthy and my idea of a Friday night is to stay home, watch a documentary, have a great food, go to bed early and wake up early, and the person I'm dating is, I want to go out to a club, I want to do cocaine, I want to go and drink alcohol, I want to go and do all this stuff, then that's going to be some conflict and it can still work. However, the difference is there's going to be so much conflict.
So
we want our relationship to be the undertone of a relationship to be ease. It doesn't mean there's not going to be conflict, but we just want it to have ease. For example, this shirt right now, is my body size is a large. So this is a large. So everyone listening, just say this answer in your mind. If this shirt was an extra, extra small, could I still wear this shirt? What do you think, Lewis?
I'd be like, it'd be very hard.
Yes, right? So most people say, no, the answer is no, you can't wear this shirt. The truthful answer is I could. However, it would just be really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to the relationships. Some people ask, well, Matt, if I'm not compatible, can this relationship still last? Yes, it can last.
Great analogy.
However, it's going to be really uncomfortable. So we want both. We want something that is the right fit. And those are three things that you can start to look for.
Powerful, man. Just one more layer on that question. for you, do you? Because some people have asked me, because I do some content in relationships, and they happen to be the ones that go a little bit more viral. And I jump on a podcast and they just layer me with relationship questions. So I kind of just do my best to answer them. And someone's asked me this question. I didn't really have an answer for it. It was like, when's the right time to have those discussions? Like, is it a week in, a month in? And my answer was just listen to your intuition and just follow your intuition. But do you have like a recommendation for when is it time to have the questions around the mutual vision, the mutual values, the intention, short-term, long-term? When do you recommend that for people?
Great question. So the answer is it depends, right? But I will give you some things that might be helpful. So with Kelly and I, let me come back to a few different things. Some people, it's like, when do we have those conversations? And when is it too soon to ask for what it is that I need? So for example, Kelly on the second date, she was like, I would really love a good morning message tomorrow. Would you be open to that? And I loved that because she was just so upfront. These are my needs. Would you be open to fulfilling them? So rather than me guessing, rather than her being in resentment because she didn't get her needs met, she was just totally upfront. I would really love this. So there is no such thing as too soon to ask for what it is that you need. Because let's say that she did do that and I was a no. Well, guess what? She just got really clear that I'm probably someone who isn't compatible for what it is that she wants in a partner. So fuck yes for doing that. So the sooner, the better. When it comes to asking about mutual vision, it can be done on the very first date if done in a way where it can be like playful and not like an interview. Like, yeah. Tell me what you want in a partner right now. What is it that you're looking for? You can play a bit of a game. It's like, hey, let's play a bit of a game to, I just want to get to know you. Let's just play a question game. You up for that? Yeah. Okay. Well, what is it that you would love in the next 10 years, in the next 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? And just play a bit of a game. Oh, yeah, I'd do this. And this is, and now you're getting into a connection game rather than it being like an interview, which is what most people do whenever it is that we're coaching people. They're getting on dates. They want to get to marriage and they want to have that kids and they want to get to this thing because they're in a rush. And then it just has so much pressure for the other. It feels so much like pressure on for the other person, and it can get into an interview. But if you lace the conversation with play, like a game, and looking for connection rather than, is this the right person? Tell me if it's the right person. So if not, I can leave. Then it can be easier. Now it's never too soon to ask for that.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer, man. Look, there's one more question and then we'll start to wrap things up. What's something that you're working on a personal level that the world doesn't get to see?
Love that. My health.
Okay.
Right. So one of the things that I was speaking to a friend the other day, 3 days ago, I was just opening up and I was sharing that one of the things that has been really inconsistent for me is my training and how it is that I eat. Yeah. I eat, relatively speaking, compared to most people, it's really healthy. However, there's been a lot of times where I'll like train really hard for like 4 to 5 days, and then I won't train for at all the next week, or train for one day, and I'll just be eating French fries. I'll be watching TV. I just will be not be moving, won't be stretching. I'm like, why do I have back pain?
It's like, wonder.
Yes. So right now I've been really consistent with dialing in my habits. And so training and also habits that have me feel spacious, like little thing, making my bed right before this podcast, I made my bed. I took my supplements. I have an app that I use to ensure that all these little things that I normally wouldn't do that has me feel peaceful, helps me be peaceful, is something that I'm focusing on, like habits that I haven't shared on social media. Making my bed, taking my supplements, making sure that I'm cleaning my room for at least 2 minutes every single day, just getting into that habit, studying a new language, all of this stuff.
That's beautiful, man. Man, there's so much depth to you, which I knew that was the case before we jumped on here, but I just got to hopefully give a glimpse of that to my audience and to everyone that's enjoyed the podcast today. If anyone wants to connect with you, man, work with you, dive down your content, jump into some of your work, some of your programs, where's the best place to find you, connect with you?
Yeah, so you can go to mattandkelly.co. Kelly is spelt with K-E-L-L-E-Y. .co, not com. So you can check us out there. You can go to our retreats. You can go to mattcama.com, C-A-M-A, if you want to do one-on-one coaching. But the best option, if you want to see everything, just go to my Instagram, go to my TikTok, and you'll see the link in my bio, and you can see everything that I offer there. Just type in Matt Karma on pretty much any platform, and you will see me pop up.
Beautiful, man. I'd save this question to the last sometimes if we got the time. I think we've got enough time for it. If you were to write a book and you could only leave three lessons to pass on to the world, what would that be?
Great question. Three lessons. And everyone had to listen to this.
Everyone. Absolutely everyone.
The first lesson would be along the lines of healing the nervous system.
Yes.
So that would be the first thing. The second thing would be around communication, because I believe that it's a superpower. If someone knows how to communicate, whether it be with conflict resolution, listening, communicating their needs, knowing how to say things in a way that gets someone to respond, influence, right? Then there's so much magic that can be created in your life if you hone in on that skill. Yeah. And the third step would be something to do with a way of living that has empathy. You know, for me, I am a vegan and I live this way because I believe in, you know, I have a Himsa on my neck here. I think it's on this side. Yes, on this side here. And it just means, put simply, my translation is nonviolence. So whether that be with the way that we communicate, whether that be with the way that we live, it's impossible to have no form of violence in some aspect, but doing our best to do the least harm is, I believe, a beautiful way of living. So whether it be the way that we live, the way that we treat people, the way that we live our lives, put simply, then I believe it leads for a happy life.
Beautiful. Are you familiar with the Tao Te Ching? Have you gone down that rabbit hole?
No. What's this about?
Wayne Dyer, there's a book, it's the book on the bottom of that pile just behind me, but Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. And he translates the Tao Te Ching into like kind of modern day sort of language of how you can use it. But it's just, yeah, like the ocean attracts all to it by staying below everyone. So it's all about being, not trying to be bigger than anyone, stronger power, like how like the concept of walls, like for me, I share a lot of similarities with you. I'm just like, celebrating killing someone else is not like, it's the whole violence thing really resonates with me, man. But great book. It's called Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life by Dr. Wayne Dyer. I think that's really aligned with you. I think you get a lot of value from it, bro. But man, thank you for your time. This has been awesome. Pleasure. And I appreciate your time today, my man.
Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for everyone for listening.
Thank you, man.